KUJZ is 95.3 The Score. And now,
check this out.
It's crunch time with Steve Tannen.
They think he's a righteous dude.
When I win.
Live from the Papa John's studio.
Wait a minute. Let me get CB on the line. We're green lighting it. It's a go.
And I want full air support. I want tanks and some fire throwers. And I want explosions over here. And I want planes going. Cool.
Are they going to bust in here and arrest us?
It's crunch time on 95.3 The Score.
Oregon is going to win it. Start to celebrate, and the 106th Rose Bowl will go into the record books for all time for fans everywhere to look back and see that Oregon beat Wisconsin again in the Rose Bowl. 2-1, final score. Oregon 28, Wisconsin 27, Oregon, the 2020 Rose Bowl champions.
Oh, yeah. That's not a bad start to 2020. Our own Jerry Allen on the call as Oregon wins a ho-hum Rose Bowl. So rule one, moving forward in college football, Oregon and Wisconsin now have to play every year in the Rose Bowl. They've played two games that have gone down to the wire, just scintillating for different reasons. Remember, it was actually 8 years ago today that Oregon won that game. And at the time, it was the highest scoring Rose Bowl ever. Forever. And then, so a little more defense-minded yesterday. But 28-27 ended up covering the over. I didn't have the over. If you were listening to the show last week, I had a moment and I said, Alabama and Oregon.
Last week, it was 2 days ago. It's Thursday, Steve.
Yeah, I am really trained. I can't be the only one who had a lot of Sunday going on yesterday. I mean, that seemed pretty common.
I had Saturday. Again, all day
Saturday.
Saturday. The Ducks play, you
right,
play college
nuts.
Football on Saturdays. I was doing everything I would normally do, what, the 10 out of the 14 games that Oregon played this year were on Saturdays. They play on Saturdays. It's what they do. It's a Saturday. It had to have been Saturday. I was supposed to not work today, and then we work tomorrow.
I was checking to see if Shameless was on and Ray Donovan and all kind of things, and I just kept having to remind myself. And by the way, I've said this many, many, many times. One of the beautiful things about Wednesday being a holiday or vacation, you might think it's Sunday, you might think the week is starting, then you wake up, it's like, oh, tomorrow, when you woke up today, is Friday. So, cool. Cool story, bro! So, what do we have on slate for today? With Fentress traveling to Philly for the NFL playoffs, we'll do him tomorrow. Elise Woodward, North Eugene High School graduate, played basketball at the University of Washington in the mid to late 90s. Great player. She's going to be in town to call Ducks Buffs tomorrow to kick off Pac-12 play for the women. And she will join us at 3:10. So coming up very shortly. We're off a little bit early tonight because the Oregon men are in kind of their house of horrors, the place they've never won in Boulder to take on the Coloradians. What's that, the Coors Center? That would be a surprise, by the way. Coors sponsoring a big-time sporting event in the state where the beer was founded.
Golden, Colorado.
I said the state.
I know. I think you were looking for the city, though.
It's actually, Golden. I wasn't. I was trying to think of his name.
Coors.
Mr. Coors. MK! So we'll revel in the Rose Bowl victory, which, by the way, a couple of things hit the these with that with you kids use now, the Twitter, in the last 45 minutes or so, than I thought was really telling. Does anybody now the reason Clemson is in the finals is because of their red zone defense? I mean, those three trips in the earlier part of the game where they held the Ohio State University to a field goal instead of a touchdown was the reason that Lawrence and Etienne and Higgins and the boys were able to mount a comeback. And, of course, Oregon, a defense that was sort of back on its heels and really, really, I hate to say it, but kind of reeling, that bowed up and held Wisconsin to that field goal so that the three-point lead didn't become a 10-point lead. It became a 6-point lead. Oregon had the best, second-best behind Clemson ratio of red zone trips that did not turn into touchdowns, and it served them very well over the course of the year and was one of the key triggers that allowed them to win another Rose Bowl. I mean, this is a program that went to the Rose Bowl during the Eisenhower administration, would not make it again till the Clinton administration, would not win it until the Obama administration in 2012, then won it again in 2015, won it again in 2020. So basically never, ever, ever. You know, you go back to, I guess, the 1917 one. You know, I'm counting pre-World War One, at least United States involvement. And now they win three. Well, I can't say they've won three in a decade. Yesterday technically started a new decade. But over a nine-year period, they won a third of them. They played in a fourth. So, yeah, there's been some very odd reaction. Stuart Mandel tweeted out the latest numbers, and there have been 24 New Year's Day bowl games that were not playoff games, national title games, you know, since the 2014 season. Ducks Badgers was the second most watched. Now, of course, a one-point game helps. You know, I guess it was the Penn State USC Rose Bowl 3 years ago, which was highly entertaining. They surpassed that, and then Washington Ohio State was the most watched. And what has disturbed me the most, well, as much, is some of these idiot Beav and Husky trolls trying to downplay the Rose Bowl, like making the Rose Bowl. I'm like, as a hardcore East Coast guy, we watched the games that impacted the national championship and the Rose Bowl. I mean, you know, there were other good games, and of course, being gambling degenerates, we always had a reason to watch. But I don't, for people who are just so focused on being dismissive, what they think benefits their program in putting down the Pac-12 representative, you know, I guess it's the ultimate cliche. You point one finger forward and four point back at you. So I don't know what to say. That's just, well, yeah, I guess
you'd have
one's
to,
neutral.
You'd have to break your thumb to have the fourth one.
And some people deserve to have their thumb broken.
Or if you point at somebody, like you point with your thumb, but then you have to like angle your thumb down with your other four fingers back.
Well, maybe
you.
The cliche is one and three. I don't know. But the Rose Bowl is always something that's discussed because it's got so much tradition. And the tradition, you know, for a school like USC and Ohio State and Wisconsin and Michigan, you know, Big Ten, Pac-12, I think a lot of folks around the country could name who plays in the Rose Bowl. I think a lot of people, if you went Fiesta Bowl, Sugar Bowl, Orange Bowl, they'd be like, is that the one where the SEC is? Which one's the ACC connected with? How's the Big 12 getting there? Didn't the Big East used to be involved? So, yeah, you got that going for you, which is nice. And it was an incredible game, a great ending. the pass to Juwan Johnson to seal the game when, in a lot of cases, you just run it, wind it. I mean, even in a dangerous scenario, if Arroyo had decided to just run, punt, they and of course, the key there is, in college, even if you leave 25 or 30 seconds, the danger is they've got a field goal kicker with some range. And it's different if Oregon's up 4, I think they probably run it and not take a chance. But up 1, now you got to kick that ball. I mean, you got to put the ball in the hand of your senior NFL quarterback. They did. It paid off, and it was a beautiful thing. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. If you'd like to jump on in, or you can hit us up via the text line, 321-0824. Last night's post game was fun. A lot of you were texting. First of all, it was fun to hear from a lot of you who were actually down there. And, you know, you could follow along on social media and just see. Is it surprising that a majority of the crowd were Wisconsin fans? Which, I don't know, is that odd considering we're here on the West Coast and, what's it, 1,400, 1,500 miles from Madison and about 840 miles or so from Eugene?
But you also think about it's, you know, 14, 15 degrees below zero in most of Wisconsin, and it's, you know, it was pretty fine weather here in Eugene in December. The desperation to get west and to find some sunshine is always greater from every team from the Big Ten that makes the Rose Bowl. Because even I was looking at photos today on Facebook from when I was at the 2012 Rose Bowl, which was like 8 years ago today. It was the exact same crowd setup. It was Wisconsin had the west end zone, and it was all red all the way around. There were these weird random red sections right in the middle of the Oregon sideline, and then that one bottom corner of the bowl was, you know, Oregon's big setup, and that's just kind of how they were. It was very, I think, the 2015 Rose Bowl in the playoff was the one where Oregon had the large advantage in terms of fans, and I think that was because most Florida State fans had just been to the Rose Bowl for the Natty the year before and were probably like, don't think I need to make a second trip to the Rose Bowl this year. With the playoff, it was kind of different. Would they, you know, save the money to go on the trip to the playoff but not the Rose Bowl? They're just at the Rose Bowl. It's whatever. So I expected there to be a lot of Wisconsin fans there.
There were. I wonder if there's a way to determine which fans travel the most. I mean, is there like a time where, and you know, a lot of the powerhouse programs, center of the country, southeast portion of the country, you know, the only reason they have to travel, although 9 years ago, when the Ducks played Auburn in the national title game, the amount of Auburn fans, and remember, there was like an ice age taking place between Alabama and Arizona, you know, states moving west. I-10 through Texas was just supposedly treacherous, and these crazy people made it out there, and it was unbelievable. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. For those of you who've texted me and said, I just turned on the show, why haven't you talked about, we've been on 12 minutes. And by the way, when you do a call-in show, if there's a subject you want to talk about, you call in. Are we on the same page here? All right, I guess we're having a little issue trying to land Elise. I'm hoping I got the number right. That would not be, no, I'm reading the email from her. All right, let's get to the phone lines and bring in John. John, good afternoon. How's it going?
Oh, it's going great, of course, Steve, since we won that game. We went down to the Pac-12 championship game, and speaking of fans, Utah fans, I think, had us outnumbered maybe, I don't know, just let's just say there was more of them. And oh my goodness, were they vocal and proud and loud before that game. Funny, couldn't find very many of them afterwards. But yeah, just so proud of the Ducks, and so, you know, a night when the offense just couldn't get the job done, the defense really, really, really stepped up. But then Justin with the run, so nothing too much to say other than that. I was just passing that along, but just really proud of our team and just really proud of Justin Herbert. And hopefully one of these young fellas, these four guys we got trying to develop as our next replacement, can take his place. Thanks.
Yeah, no, I appreciate the call, John. And the defense has been an area where Oregon has leaned. I was talking about it frequently yesterday that if you look back and reflect upon the season, at times when the Duck offense fell into what we've come to call those empty possessions, I mean, how many times was it like, all right, it's back on the defense, you got to get the ball back. All right. Oh, offense went, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 out, punted. All right, defense, got to go to the well again. You know, maybe a one-score game either side. Think about the Washington State game or the Washington game or keeping them in the Auburn game or some of the tighter games early on, and, whether it was against Cal or Stanford where they weren't in blowout mode. And the defense just responded. And like what I was talking with Kenny about yesterday, pre- and post-game, while Andy Avalos did not make the final five for the Broyles Award, three of those five guys were experienced. They were with the program. Two of them, the winner, Joe Brady from LSU, and one of the others were new hires. If it came down to who were the five best new hires during the offseason as far as assistants, absolutely would have been on a list including Avalos. I mean, that defense was fantastic this year. By the numbers, I think it was the best in more than 30 years, but they're not waltzing with the North and beating Utah and winning the Rose Bowl without the performance on that side of the ball, for sure. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's bring in Ed. Ed, good afternoon. How's it going?
It's going good. It was a great game yesterday. I'm sure glad Arroyo at least got one scripted play to work, and after that I think he was already on to UNLV, but the offense just didn't work much other than the Herbert running a few times. So, but on the side of why there's so many Wisconsin people there, I think those schools, my sister went to University of Wisconsin, those schools are gigantic, and those people are all over the country. And that Wisconsin and Ohio State, they're the only major school in their states. And so not only is the weather factor there, they just have such a big alumni base, and they're all over the place. And so, you know, when it's time to travel, they love to. I mean, there's people coming from all over the country going to those games and meeting up with people, and that's just a gigantic place. And Oregon's starting to get a better following. There were more there at that game than 2012, and as we said, 2014 we had the, you know, we had the FSU factor, but it's good. I think the Big Ten will always have more people just because of
that's a great point.
Bigger than us.
No, that makes a lot of sense. That's actually a perfect explanation. I appreciate it, Ed. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Looks like we had a little mix up between me and our guest, who thought that because I offered today or tomorrow, she thought it would be tomorrow, and then so we were communicating while I was taking your call, so we're actually going to talk to her in about 8 minutes. So we're back on track. A few of you during the game, a couple of you during the post game, and with the announcement that Jalen Redd was held out for personal reasons. Did anybody hear an explanation as to why we did not see Spencer Webb in the game at all? Because that's a pretty interesting observation. And when it comes to personnel packages, because you have multiple receivers and runners and, you know, how they rotate within the secondary, I'm usually focused on the plays, and that's interesting. Yeah, a lot of whining about Arroyo and the play calling, which is, you know, always a default for a fan base. And there did seem to be an element of predictability, in particular some of those short yardage situations, which has frustrated a lot of fans throughout the course of the year. And I think that some folks were pointing out that because the inside running and the way in which Oregon's defense handled the between the tackles efforts of Jonathan Taylor, and then they started going to those fly sweeps, which eventually caught up to them. Because, you know, if you're going to run a halfback or a wide receiver option and it works, it's witty, it's a thing of beauty. But if it blows up, it's like, in a big game like that, why are you taking the ball out of the hand of your quarterback? So when you consistently are handing the ball off to wide receivers and having them, you know, run outside, then trying to turn up field, it's not something they usually do. And it eventually led to a really key fumble. So, you know, you could view this from multiple different angles. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. If you wanted to jump on in, we're going to put that on hold for a tad because we're going to take a break. We'll come back. We'll have an update. And then we'll talk some Pac-12 hoops with Elise Woodward coming at you next. 95.3 The Score.
We're riding the waves of technology just for you. You can call the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline at 284-8571. Text 321-0824. Tweet Steve at SportsTalk953.
Justin Herbert in the shotgun takes the snap. Quarterback run off the fake. Runs right. Gets a stiff arm. Gets loose at the 25-20. Right sideline 10. 5. Touchdown! Justin Herbert on a sprint run to the end zone. His third rushing touchdown of the game.
Yeah. A little Justy Herbert with a hat trick. Goes out with 3 rushing touchdowns and 2 big league stiff arms. And those guys that he casted aside like they were, I don't know, gnats? That Pearson kid, and who's the other one with the unique last name?
Goose Chase.
What?
This guy named Goose Chase on Wisconsin.
Wild Goose.
Wild Goose. That's what it was. Wild Goose, and then he was on a Wild Goose Chase.
To corner and Reggie Pearson. Now, understand something. Those aren't, you know, kind of old school 5'10", 175-pound defensive backs. They both go 197. And Justin's like, yeah, you're not tackling me. Bye-bye. Boof. What you do on the post game, one of the sponsored segments is Who Got Floored? And that's the first time I've ever used an offensive player. It's usually a special teams play or a defensive play. But, yeah, I guess one of the values of having not a prototypical but an exceptionally large physical quarterback who goes 6'6", 240 is the ability to shed secondary dudes who are would-be tacklers. All right, let's lock it up. Pac-12 Hoops starts tonight for the men, and tomorrow, here in town at Matt Knight Arena, we'll have the call here of the women. The Pac-12 Network has the TV call, and alongside Ann Schatz will be our next guest, a North Eugene grad and a heck of a player during her career with the Huskies under Coach Gobrecht in the mid-1990s. You can follow her on Twitter. The handle is at Elise M. Woodward. Elise, thanks for joining us. A, happy 2020 to you. Thanks for the time. How you doing these days?
I'm good. Happy New Year and go Highlanders.
Yeah, I don't get a lot of that on this show. I've got to admit it, even though my son graduated there about 13 years ago. But
oh, cool. Right on.
So if I did my homework properly, you were a key player on the second ever Washington team to reach the Sweet 16 in 95. You knocked off Ohio, Arkansas, then you fell to a very good Texas Tech team who was the 2 seed in the region, which was eventually won back then by Pat Summitt's Tennessee team. Well, what kind of memories does that tournament run stir for you?
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. I remember it. I don't remember actually when you're saying who we beat. I remember losing to Tech, and I remember we were in the same region with Tennessee. We went down to Knoxville and got to see them. We didn't play them. But to see them up close and personal was pretty crazy, and to be in that arena where they packed it out at the time, and to see the growth of the women's game since that point, you know, 20 plus years ago is phenomenal. And you know, I grew up going to Duck games my whole life. My brother played football at Oregon, and so I remember going to all the, you know, the games, and when Elwin Heine was a coach. And,
okay.
You know, I didn't get to see Beth Smith play. I was too young, but I remember seeing her trophy cases and all the stuff that she had throughout old Mac Court where I grew up watching. And I just have really fond memories of, at that time, both being a Eugene basketball fan and then going on to play at UW.
You know, before we get into this matchup, I want to hit on your alma mater, who with the magnificent Kelsey Plum, obviously, as you're aware, made the Final Four run, then the Sweet 16. Mike Nabors left for Arkansas. And the last 2 years has been a little bit of a struggle with Jody, just 1-2 Pac-12 victories. But now this year, 9-3, they've already opened league play with a victory. Obviously, that's your alma mater. You keep a close watch. What's the level of optimism moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're getting better. The program was pretty decimated when Mike Nabors left for Arkansas. They didn't have a single returning starter. I think their most minutes played was Amber Melgoza, and she got like 3 minutes a game as a freshman. So it was a complete and total rebuild at that time. And now Jody Wynn's got some players in. She signed 3 4-star recruits. So they're building. I think a goal for them will be to finish somewhere near the middle of the conference and not near the bottom of the conference. And they've had some nice moments so far this year, but especially defensively. But in the Pac-12 this year, good luck when you're trying to climb up that ladder. It is just, this is the best the top half of the conference has ever been. I mean, by far. It's incredible with 4 top 10 teams.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I was going to ask you that later, but we might as well get to it now. When you do a sports show like this, and I know you've hosted radio shows, you can debate the best conference in football or other sports. At least I'm thinking when you hold down 3 of the top 5 spots, 4 of the top 10, I mean, the cutthroat nature of this league is just not negotiable. It's going to be mayhem the next 9 weeks.
It's going to be awesome. I can't wait. I'm so looking forward to this season. I'm really excited to be on the call tomorrow just to see Oregon. They've got 3 of the top best 10 players in the nation, and they have for the last 3 years in a row. And I've enjoyed every time that I've had a chance to call their games because the talent level is off the charts. But it's not just in Eugene. It's also in Corvallis. It's also in Westwood with UCLA. It's the talent. Palo Alto is crazy. It's an awesome time to be a Pac-12 women's basketball fan, and I can't wait to see what happens. For the Pac-12, I think it's clearly the best conference in terms of national title contenders. They've got the most, but they have to break through and get that national title for the first time since 92. Women's softball has done it many, many times. Women's soccer has done it this year. Women's volleyball has done it this year. But women's basketball, that national title has been elusive since Stanford did it in 90 and 92.
The Conference of Champions, as Bill Walton would say. We're talking Pac-12 hoops with Elise Woodward. So in preparing to call tomorrow's game here in town, I mean, the preseason coaches and media voted Colorado dead last. They're unbeaten. They're almost ranked.
Yep.
This is year four under J.R. Payne, who played for Kelly Graves at St. Mary's. What have you seen that have made them such a nice surprise?
Well, you know, they're a team that has a lot of young talent. They're really young. And they started undefeated last year and then had a rash of injuries and just could never get themselves off the mat. I was surprised that they were picked to finish 12th, but when you just kind of have the year they had last year, I think people, it's more about what they did last year, not about what they could expect this year. But they're good. Their point guard was named Freshman of the Week, Jalen Sherrod. She's a true freshman who's really fast and is looking forward to the challenge of facing Sabrina. She's going to be, you know, maybe 4 inches shorter than Sabrina, maybe five. I'll be interested to see her for the first time in person tomorrow. But she's really fast. J.R. Payne, when I was speaking with her yesterday and getting ready for the game, said, you know, she grew up watching Jordan Canada and, you know, was always really impressed. But she's somebody that is a big fan of the game and watched Sabrina Ionescu a ton growing up and, you know, can't wait for the challenge tomorrow. And Emma Clark is a player that's massively improved. There's a lot of players that you're going to see this week in between both Colorado and Utah that are massively improved from over a year ago.
I want to get to the Oregon team and start with the coach. I mean, you worked in Seattle for many years. He was at Gonzaga starting in 2000, actually in 2000. Working across the state, Elise, how cognizant were you of the work he was doing with the Bulldogs? You know, built them into a West Coast Conference power that obviously culminated in that Elite Eight run with Courtney Vandersloot.
Yeah, he's done a phenomenal job. I remember watching Courtney Vandersloot in high school and was wondering why she hadn't been recruited to some of the top national programs. I watched her for literally 5 minutes in the Tacoma Dome and said, this is a baller. And I couldn't understand it, but Kelly Graves saw it, and she became the first point guard in NCAA history to have 2,000 points and 1,000 assists. And she has been phenomenal at the WNBA level. She's been an all-star, and he helped create that. And he has the same thing going right now with Sabrina Ionescu. Kelly's a really affable guy. He's a very likable guy. He's an easy guy to play for. He doesn't take himself too seriously. He's self-deprecating, but he's also extremely smart, a really hard worker, relentless recruiter. And with him taking over at Oregon, I remember saying he's got everything he needs to turn that into a national power. Great national recruiting base, national name brand, a commitment to women's sports, and he's done it. And he has the number one recruiting class ranked in the nation coming in next year, which is what you need to do when you have a good run, frankly, is what Washington had with Kelsey Plum. And then when Kelsey Plum and that class graduated and Mike Nabors left, it fell backwards. For Kelly Graves in Oregon, Kelly Graves isn't going anywhere, which is a big difference, but it's that recruiting year after year after year that turns you into a great program.
No, believe me, we have him on once a week, and it's always one of the most fun things we do. He is,
yeah.
He's terrific. I want to get to the junior who wears number zero. Satu Sabully, Coach Graves calls her a unicorn. We've seen her game evolve. I mean, now the way she finishes at the rim with either hand, she hits threes, and oh, she's 6'4". Elise, what makes her just so unique and your basic nightmare matchup?
Well, I mean, I think you mentioned a lot of it. The thing that I always find fascinating is lefties have an advantage because you're always taught as a young kid growing up to overplay the right and make somebody go to their weak hand. So you have to consciously think when you're playing a lefty to rotate over, to get your other hand up, to block the shot, to do things that to take away that left hand. She is a player that goes well with either hand, but what's interesting is she shoots her threes left-handed. She drives better right-handed. She's a natural right-handed person. And so she's really a unicorn. You don't see that ever. Lefties are unique enough, but when you're a player that, you know, shoots deep one hand, shoots in the lane, and goes hard with the other hand, it's really difficult to match up. But she's 6'4". She's extremely graceful. She's got great body control. She shot 41% from the three last year. For somebody that's 6'4", it's nearly impossible to affect her shot outside. So, you know, she's a player that's very good finesse-wise. I think she could still really dominate on the boards if she wanted to, but she doesn't even need to because she's got Sabrina and Ruzi in there. She doesn't even have to go down there and get, like, feisty and mix it up. She can just kind of be pretty and float around on the outside, and she's very graceful, and she's a wonderful player that's going to have a lot of success at the next level.
Couple final thoughts for Elise Woodward of the Pac-12 Network. You mentioned Ruthie Hebert, who's their interior warrior. I mean, you hear everybody who watches, I mean, the way she works the pick and roll with Sabrina, like few others ever, any level. I mean, she hits 70%. She's a double-double machine. Now a senior, I mean, from your days as a player and observing, I mean, how special of a big is she? And, you know, as she's helped raise this program among the nation's elite.
You know, I think she's an old-school post player to me, and I love it. I love back-to-the-bucket players and the pick-and-roll posts. That she just is an impossible guard. She knows how to seal her opponent. She is a player that is unflappable. She doesn't ever seem affected by any kind of defense. She's still going to make 7 out of 10, as she's done for two now, you know, this season, 3 years in a row. And she never does anything she's not capable of doing. That's why she shoots 70%. She's not going to go attempt a bunch of threes. She's going to go and get into her money spots and finish. And I mean, Sabrina is averaging over 9 assists a game. So it's half the Ruthie makes 70% of her shots, and then Ruthie in turn can thank Sabrina because she gets her the ball in perfect places. They are so much fun as a tandem to watch. It's, you know, John Stockton and Karl Malone. Right. It's the best pick and roll combos. Name them, and there are two of them. They're just fabulous, and they make each other better.
You know, I think it's a couple games ago, our play-by-play guy, Terry Johns, he didn't even call the play. He goes, pick and roll, you know who to you know who. He didn't even have to give their names.
Right?
So I guess I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about number 20. I've been doing this show in town for a quarter century, and no duck has been more loved by fans. You know, whether it's Marcus Mariota, Luke Ridenour, I mean, as great a player as you were and as an analyst, I mean, just what qualities pop, which, let's face it, she's the current face of college basketball, I think, right now, men or women.
I completely agree. And I think, one, she's very good with the fans. Two, she's phenomenal. I mean, I don't know what kind of order you want to put these in, but she's a player that has been at the top of her game and has been the National Point Guard of the Year and an All-American since her sophomore season. And it's not very often in the men's game when you're phenomenal and you're considered one of the very best players in the entire sport, you leave early. It's not very rare when you have somebody that can legitimately lay claim to be the best player in their sport and you get to watch them for 4 seasons in a row. And she has become a legend in Eugene because of the fact that she's been going to be a 3-time All-American. She was the National Freshman of the Year. And then she's carried that over to success with the team and made everybody around her better. And the Elite Eight run as a freshman was a bit of a surprise, but now we look back and it shouldn't be. The Elite Eight as a sophomore, Final Four as a junior. And I can't wait to see if she can bust through and win that national championship. If she did, I don't know how you top that in Eugene. I really don't.
No, actually, you can't if you know the history.
Yeah,
folks,
like she's winning multiple national championships, right?
Right. No pressure on the next group.
Right. Exactly.
Folks, she's Elise Woodward, a pride of North Eugene High, a terrific student athlete who was a team captain at Washington, all academic Pac-10. She'll be with Ann Schatz on the call tomorrow night on the Pac-12 Network. On Twitter, follow. The handle is at Elise W. Woodward. Elise, thanks so much for joining us. Travel safe. Enjoy the game. Have a fantastic 2020, and I hope we can catch up soon down the road.
You bet. I'm looking forward to returning to the hometown this weekend and catching up on my own stomping grounds, too. Should be fun.
All right. Hey, thanks a lot. Appreciate the time.
You bet. Anytime, hon.
All right. Good stuff. Knows her stuff. Yes, she went back, and she started at UW in 94. 4. They made a tournament run, then the Sweet 16. I think she played in 3 tournaments total. And she worked at KJR in Seattle, and obviously now with the Pac-12 Network. I think she's also worked with ESPN, and obviously, as you listened, great personality, really knows her stuff. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back and wrap up Crunch Time with the Lightning Round next. 95.3 The Score.
I smell roses. I smell roses.
Sports Talk, sponsored in part by Guarantee RV Supercenters, the first and only RV dealership to offer service 7 days a week. Big city selection and country savings. Visit them online at guarantee.com.
Cone, stand back to throw. Cone looking middle. Throwing middle, it is intercepted. Graham back for the 40, inside of the 35 and out of bounds at the 33-yard line. Thomas Graham Jr. And pressure right up the middle, Jerry. Jack Cone had somebody in his face.
That somebody wears number 5. Kayvon Thibodeau got right in Cone's grill. Forced them to rush a pass. And, by the way, Thomas Graham had a hell of a game as well. Kind of got lost in the excitement of the moment and, the one-handed scoop and score by Brady Breeze. But, Thomas Graham. I think they mentioned that he asked for an NFL evaluation. You know what didn't get enough play? Both teams playing in the Rose Bowl with a roster that's going to have many NFL players. They all played. Nobody decided to sit out. I know there's always a risk of injury, but for those who try and downplay the value of the Rose Bowl, nobody's sitting at a Rose Bowl. Not if you go to the Big Ten or Pac-12. Has anybody done that yet? Do we know? All right, let's wrap things up. It's Tuesday. Wow! It's Thursday. It's crunch time. Let's do a lightning round, please.
You'll have to excuse my friend. He's a little slow.
Luckily, I have prepared for such an event. The lightning round!
It's the first lightning round of 2020, and that's one of the road.
No,
help me out. I'm unprepared. A bad lightning round.
Boo this man.
By the way, can I say something?
It's Tuesday. You're not prepared.
You know what sandbagging is? Do you know what sandbagging is?
I don't.
It's in golf when you, if you're winning the hole and you have to establish your handicap, you might miss a putt here or there. So you set the bar low for tournament time. So I have a crappy opening lightning round song, meaning there's nowhere to go but up for the rest of the year.
Set the bar so low.
Which, by the way, is such a lie. I just got caught with my pants down.
Jeez. Anyways, Rose Bowl champions. What a year. 2020 already is just 2 days old. Wrapping up the 2019 season that was really quite the emotional roller coaster, losing in Dallas and a heartbreaker to Auburn, rolling through the non-conference play, then into conference play, beating Stanford, UW, and USC all on the road in one season for the first time ever. Took down Utah to win the Pac-12 for the first time since 2014. There were some flashes of maybe thoughts of a playoff appearance, the old disappointing loss to ASU on the road, but who cares? Justin Hervey, the love duck, breaks free 3 times against Wisconsin, the first guy to do that since Vince Young in a Rose Bowl game. And the Ducks are Rose Bowl champions. Oregon season was blank.
Wow. One word I get here, huh? Magnificent.
Yeah. I agree. back at the end of November, I asked you about what Tua Tagovailoa should do after his season-ending hip injury, and in case you forgot, Nick Saban kept Tua in for the game for one more series against Mississippi State so he could get some experience running the 2-minute drill. Tua then suffered what was then called the Bo Jackson hip injury, or something close to it. His year was done. According to doctors, after his hip injury timetable, it's to get back to throwing is maybe around the time of the 2020 Combine, and all of this is coming back into play because Tua announced that he will be announcing his decision as to where he will be playing next year, next Monday. Yahoo Sports' Pete Thamel also reported it may take up to 6 months for Tua to recover, which is in May or June, which is after the draft, well after the combine. Either way, it seems like he'll be ready to play come September, October 2020. Does that mean he's going to be literally taking a big bet on himself for this season? Maybe he's going to get drafted, but who announces they're going to make an announcement if they're just going to leave? If you're going to announce you're going to make an announcement, you're staying, right? What percent chance do you give Tua returning to Alabama?
You know what? A week ago, I would have said about 10%. Now I'm thinking it's about a third. I'm giving him a 33% chance of going back, Roll Tide.
That's very fair. A Reddit user on r college football, the college football subreddit, that a user made an incredible observation that was then tweeted out by @RedditCFB. That's the Twitter handle for the subreddit. The internet, very fun. The user is AgsMyDude. He pointed out that the Pac-12, since having their conference championship game in 2011, the loser of that championship game has not won the bowl game that they played
in.
Classic Larry Scott, always putting the second place finishing team just in a horrible spot for no good reason. It was UCLA in back-to-back years, ASU, Arizona, USC, Colorado, Stanford, and now Utah in back-to-back years that not just lost the Pac-12, but ended the season on a two-game losing streak. Yikes. In one decade, you've not only got the entire division in a conference going to the conference championship game and losing it, which is weird enough, but then they're cursed and you have to lose the bowl game after? I mean, you can say correlation doesn't equal causation, but come on, 9 years of this happening? This is insane. What percent chance do you give the loser of the 2020 Pac-12 championship game winning their bowl game?
I think that USC will win the Alamo Bowl.
Wow.
So I'm giving him a 75% chance.
Last one here. We talk a lot about the importance of the bye in the NFL playoffs, but oh boy, is it important. So in the 2018 regular season, 2019 playoffs, the two seeds that reached the Super Bowl were both two seeds. In 2017, both one seeds. 2016, a one seed, a two seed. 2015, both one seeds. 2014, both one seeds. 2013, both one seeds. And on and on and on and on and on, all the way through 1990. That's just the last six that I gave you. In every Super Bowl, there was at least one team that had a bye that ended up reaching the biggest game of the year. Even when the playoffs had just five teams for some reason, I don't know who let that happen, teams with byes still made the Super Bowl as one of the top two teams. And all of them. I don't understand how this happens. So congrats to at least one, if not two, of Baltimore, Kansas City, San Francisco, and Green Bay. Your path has been paved to Miami, unless we're due for a literal historic first. What percent chance do you give Super Bowl 54 being between two teams that had a bye?
80%. It's logical. There's a reason New England's always in it, and this is the first time they played the wild card round since the 2009 playoffs. The NFL runs truest to form, right up there with the NBA. Baseball and hockey, you generally get your crazy run, and of course, occasionally in the NCAA men's tournament. All right, that's just about a wrap. Remember, we're off at 5:30 as Oregon men's basketball starts Pac-12 play tonight at Colorado. Back with Sports Talk, 95.3 The Score.
But man, y'all got a coconut up.